Send me a postcard, drop me a line, stating point of view. Indicate precisely what you mean to say. You're sincerely wasting away. Give me your answer, fill in a form, mine forevermore. Will you still need me? Will you still feed me when I'm 64?
Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Eric Kingston, who is a professor of social work at Syracuse University and the founding co-director of the Social Security Works, an organization which launches and staffs the Strengthened Social Security Coalition, which he co-chairs. He served as policy advisor to two presidential commissions, the 1982-1983 National Commission on Social Security Reform and the 1994 Bipartisan Commission on Entitlement and Tax Reform, and also served on the Advisory Committee of the Social Security Administration's Transition Team. Welcome to Background Briefing, Eric Kingston.
Hi, Ian. Great to be here again.
And you've been in Washington at this gathering of a lot of stakeholders, I guess, in terms of what's happening with Social Security or likely to happen with Social Security at a time when Representative Paul Ryan of Wisconsin and Senator Patty Murray of Washington, the chairs of the House and Senate budget committees, finally sitting down for their first session of a conference committee supposed to hammer out a federal budget for fiscal 2014. And, of course, at the same time this is happening, the Social Security Administration announces that the size of the 2014 cost of living adjustment will be 1.5%, which is the fourth smallest since COLAs were introduced in 1975. So good timing, or important timing. Tell me about who was at the gathering.
Okay. This was a conference that was put together to move advocates and move members of Congress who are quite supportive onto the offensive. That for many years now, we've been running around saying, don't cut Social Security. Don't cut the cost of living adjustment. As you know, Ian, there's a proposal that would, had it been in effect, the cost of living adjustment, instead of being 1.5%, that huge sum, it would have been 1.2% roughly. There's a proposal called the chain CPI, which would cut the program and have huge impacts on every American, today's and tomorrow's beneficiaries. We're tired of saying, don't do this. We put together, and many of us who came to this conference, put together a story. The story is, Americans face a retirement income security crisis. Two-thirds of working Americans today are on a trajectory where they will not be able to maintain their standard of living in old age. And that assumes that they're working until age 65. So two-thirds of America, we have a huge deficit in retirement protection. We happen to have, that's sort of a part of the story. The second part of the story was, we actually have a system that does a darn good job. We built it because we wanted to protect against some things that we can't protect on our own. We wanted to protect against loss of income at retirement, or if disabled, or if a parent dies, all of that. And that's worked pretty darn well. We've made adjustments as needed. It's a popular system. It works. Problem is, so the second piece is, we have a system that works, and we unveiled a number of plans today to expand Social Security. We made the point, the speakers early on made a point that we are not a poor country. The problem is that the distribution of the growth in our country in the past 40 years has really gone to the top 1%. And middle-income people, working people, have seen their incomes largely stay flat or decline. We can afford this system. The problem we face is hugely important to the well-being of the society. And then the final point was, we have the politics to do this. With the leadership, I would say, many groups, and very importantly, the AFL-CIO, they're drawing a line. They are saying that any politician, Republican or Democrat, who votes to cut Social Security, Medicare, or Medicaid, that they will not accept it, and they will come at them politically. They will run ads in their district. They will work to have them find a job where they can be more compassionate to their constituents. So the system, we have a problem. We have a solution, Social Security. We have some plans that can expand it sensibly. And we have some of the politics. So that came together. And at the end of the day, Senator Bernie Sanders, Senator Harkin, Senator Schatz from Hawaii, quite a number of members of the House came and joined the discussion in a press conference saying that they were on board with talking about not just preventing the system from being cut, but really talking about it as an American institution that we need to call upon to protect Americans.
So, Eric Kingston, why has this not become the main debate in the United States when we have been apparently our politics are dominated by a phony debate over the deficit, that the sky is falling over the deficit, in spite of the fact that under President Obama, the deficit has shrunk from 11.1% of GDP in 2009 to 7.4% in 2012, and is projected to drop even further in the coming years. And we are not talking, while the Republicans want us to talk about deficits and debt and need to rein in government, and that's why they shut the government down and threatened to tank the economy recently, yet we don't talk about the growing income inequality in this country, and we don't talk about the endangered middle class. And as you've just pointed out, we don't talk about how millions of Americans are facing a bleak future without any retirement income.
I'll start with one piece of data, and then I won't give you data. Between 1948 and 1979, the bottom 90% got about three quarters of the growth of the income. I received about three quarters of the growth. From 1979 till 2007, the top 1% got almost three quarters of the resources from economic growth. If you're in that top 1 or the top 0.1%, part of what's going on is that this deficit discussion, or blaming seniors, or fomenting phony intergenerational war, all of that distracts from the real problems we face. Massive shifts in income and wealth that have taken place in the last 40 years, wars that we didn't pay for where we put people at risk, tax cuts that have benefited the very well-off. But if you don't want to discuss that, let's have a phony debate. Let's talk about austerity. Let's talk about why we cannot afford Social Security, Medicare. And while you're at it, let's play off young against old. So I would say that there's a basic obfuscation that takes place. And that I would say something else, too, which is that I think those of us on the progressive side, and I do this all the time, I've just done it, we focus on data so often. We focus on telling the rational story. And I believe in rationality. I'm a professor. But we have to talk about the gut, the experience of the American people. Americans outside of Washington know that this system is needed. They say whether Republicans or Democrats, they state preferences. They'd rather see taxes increased than benefits cut. So I think, and the conference was there. The conference was really a way of framing that discussion further today.
Again, I'm speaking with Eric Kingston, who is a professor of social work at Syracuse University and founding co-director of Social Security Works, an organization which launched and staffs the Strengthen Social Security Coalition, which he co-chairs. He served as policy advisor to two presidential commissions, the 1982-83 National Commission on Social Security Reform and the 1994 Bipartisan Commission on Entitlement and Tax Reform. And he also served on the advisory committee of the Social Security Administration's transition team. So, The phony debate, of course, has been fueled by this canard that's been absolutely drummed into the American people that you have to fix Social Security as though it has something to do with the deficit when it pays for itself. In fact, it pays for itself so much that the government's been borrowing against its surplus forever. And the idea that you need to cut Social Security is nonsense because the payroll taxes are projected to fall short of scheduled benefits by only 15% over the next 75 years, which is completely manageable, and it could be met by scrapping the cap, which is currently at $113,700 on incomes subject to the payroll tax. And what's unfair about that is that millionaires pay the same payroll tax as the ordinary wage earners and average Americans. So is anybody looking at that obvious fix? I mean, we wouldn't...
Yes.
I didn't mean to go on.
Before I respond to that, let me just say at socialsecurityworks.org, you can see the conference. There's a YouTube that is up on it already, socialsecurityworks.org. And if you go there, sign on to Senator Sanders' petition. There is a petition now with probably over 400,000 people to members of Congress saying, do not cut these programs. So take a look at that, and you can see pieces of this conference that is they're really quite interesting. So the question again, Ian?
The question is that this is a phony debate about a problem that doesn't exist. And if it does exist, which is a shortfall in payroll taxes, that can be met by simply scrapping the cap at $113,700, which means that millionaires and billionaires pay the same payroll tax rate as ordinary Americans. So that seems perfectly doable and totally fair.
It is. But we would go beyond that. At Social Security Works today, a number of people unveiled plans. We unveiled a plan that actually would provide across the board, roughly 10% increases for everybody now and in the future, that would cap that benefit at $150 a month. So if you're high income, you're not going to go above that. That includes family leave up to 12 weeks for... we need to dream and think of the society we want. Financing is a means. It is not the end in itself. The end is the kind of society we want for ourselves and especially our children. And the end is the kind of protections we need for ourselves in an uncertain world. So we talked about today, in our case, family leave, assuring that someone who works long and hard for 30 years in covered Social Security gets a benefit that's at least worth 125% of the poverty level, of providing up to $150 a month more in the system, of addressing some inequities in terms of widows, in terms of students. We talked about restoration of the student benefit, and we costed them out, and then we talked about taxes that are needed. And what we did in our case was say, we have a shortfall we project. We added about almost as much in terms of new benefits that respond to the needs and wishes, we believe, of the American people. And then we said, look, there are some folks who have done extremely well in the last 40 years, and many of them are civic-minded. They're not evil, necessarily. It is reasonable to place more expectations on them. It is reasonable to lift the cap. We would gradually lift that cap, and in doing that, we deal with a good chunk of the program. We talked about also putting a 20% tax on the $1,000,001 of people who have income of $1 million or more each year. Given the economy we're in, given the circumstances of most Americans, given that wealth has gone up to 225 times for the upper 1% compared to the median wealth holder, it's time to really talk about that in the country. Then we said also, let's have a slow increase in the payroll tax over 20 years, what it amounts to about 50 cents a week. Will we raise it over 20 years so that it goes up in 20 years to from 6.2% to 7.2% for employees and employers? A couple of other things. Let's put a portion of Social Security in the stock market, in equities, but in the way that the Federal Reserve pension plan does it, the railroad retirement pension plan does it, you do it in index funds, but you can get a higher rate of return. So putting these things together and a couple other things, we came up with enough money to address the projected shortfall, to expand benefits significantly, and have a small surplus after that. Now, there are lots of ways to do this, but the point is we can do it. We expect our economy to grow. If you look at the productivity growth of our society, it's been almost a straight line up in the last 80 years. The problem is those first 40 years, that was the productivity benefited working people in many, many ways. People got shorter work weeks, people got Social Security, a variety of things. The second 40 years, what we're seeing is a flattening out of income for most people and money going through the roof for the very well off. That has to be addressed if we're going to have a decent society. The other thing is you get these crocodile tears you're talking about, Ian, about we have to protect those young people. We have to protect young people. So what they're really saying is, look, we're projecting a shortfall out in 2033. And if we do nothing, we might have to cut benefits. We won't do nothing. But if we did nothing, no taxes, nothing, benefits would be cut by 25%. But since we have a problem in 2033, let's eviscerate the program now to protect the young. It's young people who are going to be most harmed by the kinds of proposals that are being talked about to cut this program. And it's young people who will benefit most and who will have an expanding economy, a moderately expanding economy, and can afford, as a society, we will be able to afford to do more if we do it thoughtfully, planfully, and we look at policies that are fair to all Americans, not just to the very well off.
So just in closing then, Eric Kingston, given that the Koch brothers, the billionaires, are funding a program to encourage kids, it's called Generation Opportunity, to encourage college kids and young Americans not to sign up for health care. And we know that for the longest time, the libertarians and others have been pushing this line that you'll never have Social Security. I think it's been called by the right wing in this country a Ponzi scheme. Various Tea Party Republicans have used that refrain. Just in the last minute, what can you say to young people to reassure them that it's going to be there, and what's the best way to counter the kind of malignancy from the Koch brothers, who, by the way, will not pick up the tab for any of these kids that they're telling that shouldn't have health insurance and won't be getting Social Security?
Their notion of protecting younger generations is to protect younger, very wealthy people in the future. They're not. This is crocodile tears. I think to young people, you have to ask, do you think this federal government, do you think the United States government will continue 20, 30, 40 years into the future? And the usual answer is yes, we believe so, or 100 years in the future. Well, if you do, the full faith and credit of the United States government is behind this. You also, if people continue to work, they pay into the system. If the economy grows as we expect, it becomes easier to provide this. But I think the good thing about young people and the polling data is young people understand, even though they've been fed the pablum of the system is going to go broke, but even with that, they generally want to see further protection in the system because they understand their grandparents, their parents, are going to need it. Now, I'm concerned about protecting it because I think the young people of our country are going to need it even more as we go forward, as we've lost. Private pensions have basically defined benefits are going down. The 401k plan is a terrible disaster. The average retirement savings of American households, is working households, is $3,000. If they have a 401k, about $10,000, $12,000. This is not going to bring us into a safe retirement. So I would look at the system in terms of, I think from the beginning, we've talked about a system that grows and changes. It's like the highway system. It's there. We can't imagine it not being there, which is part of the problem. You don't start talking about ripping up the U.S. highway system when you find the bumps in the road. You fix it. With Social Security, we make periodic adjustments. It's time to talk about not just dealing with financing, but what do we want to protect? What do we want to protect our families as we move forward? So, I would encourage them to dream.
Okay.
Not listen to the garbage.
Okay, Eric Kingston, I thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you very much, Ian.
Again, I've been speaking with Eric Kingston, a professor of social work at Syracuse University and the founding co-director of Social Security Works, an organization which launches and staffs the Strengthen Social Security Coalition, which he co-chairs. He served as policy advisor to two presidential commissions, the 1982 and 83 National Commission on Social Security Reform and the 1994 Bipartisan Commission on Entitlement and Tax Reform. And he also serves on the advisory committee of the Social Security Administration's transition team. We're going to take a brief station break and be back talking about the arrest of five Uyghurs in China and the Han Chinese relations with the Muslim Chinese minorities.